better off. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 19. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week, as I am every week, by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So the Mets kept on rolling since we last recorded, and they had an epic winning streak that finally came to an end on Sunday against the Nationals. Of course, the Mets, in very predictable Mets fashion, won the two games that, you know, on paper looked like they might lose, and lost the game on paper they probably should have won. But, you know, we'll take it. But Friday and Saturday sure as heck were fun.
Yeah,
that they were.
We'll get to that later.
As of today, going into today, although I guess I don't know if any teams played in the afternoon today. If they did, I didn't catch up on that. But the Mets were two games back of Washington in the standings, one game back of the Cardinals, and those are the two wild card position teams. And the Brewers are a half a game back of the wild card.
Phillies are a game and a half back of the Mets.
I think they're a game and a half back, period. And the Mets are a game back. Anyway. I can't exactly remember. But anyway, they're right there, right in the wild card race, although things aren't going so well.
It's a tight race.
It is.
Although things aren't going so well for the Mets right now as we record this on Tuesday night, Zach Wheeler is off to a pretty rough start, well, just to put it mildly.
It's not what you want.
Not what you want against a first-place Braves team. The Mets are already looking, you know, pretty bad. So hopefully this Braves series doesn't, you know, undo of all of our good vibes and good feels. But we'll not focus on that for now and focus on the good things that have happened in the past week. So last week we talked about a lot about how the Mets really needed to, you know, shop around the DFA candidates for some guys to shore up their depth on their bench and in their bullpen, and they actually did do that. So they acquired Joe Panik as well as Brad Brock, and both of those guys contributed positively during that nice run the Mets had the past week. So that's cool.
Yeah, they both seem to be, like... Panik, I give Panik all the credit in the world for getting the single after Todd Frazier's home run Friday night, because that was a really tough position to be in. He was making his debut too, local guy, and after the crowd exploded like that, I can only imagine how hard it was to bat after that. And it was a key at bat too, even though Juan Lagares kind of screwed up after it, but you know, he was still on base and then Juan basically replaced him. But so far, he got an RBI hit in Sunday's game. Like, he's been pretty solid so far.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, like, his overall batting line isn't all that impressive, but when he's hit, he's made it count. And he's played a decent second base, which we needed in the absence of Robinson Cano, who plays pretty smooth defense. And, you know, Joe Panik, that's what he's known for, is he's a good defensive second baseman, and that has come to fruition so far. In his Mets
tenure. in true Mets form, he doesn't have to be great.
No,
he just has to be better. And for better or worse, mostly for worse, there's a lot of territory covered by better than the other second baseman the Mets had on the roster.
Well, and it's not just second baseman too. It's not playing Altair and Lagares too.
Right, exactly. It seems pretty much that the Mets strategy for right now is to essentially platoon Panik and Lagares, like a pseudo platoon, because they obviously don't play the same position. But
like, but you can move McNeil back and forth based on where the guy is playing, who is in that weirdo little platoon.
Precisely. And it seems to be working out so far. I mean, Juan Lagares is one of the only hits that the Mets have so far, so that's nice.
Buckle up, Turner Field. Here we are. Oh no, sorry, not Turner Field. Sun Life Park.
SunTrust Park.
SunTrust. Whatever.
That terrible place in the burbs.
Who can remember all of this?
the burbs with no public transit, so none of the actual Braves fans in the city of Atlanta can get there, and so they, you know, they don't sell out their stadium when their team's in first place.
Or the playoffs.
Or, you know, playoff bound or in the playoffs. So, yeah.
Yeah, the cursed home of the New York, of the Atlanta Braves, we'll say.
Yeah, yeah. Extremely cursed place, Atlanta. Extremely cursed for the Mets throughout their history. And that seems like it's going to continue. I really hope that it doesn't kill our good vibes. But
I know.
We'll go back to the fact that Joe Panik's been good, and Brad Brock, I really like this addition. I know that he's having a terrible year, but I think very fondly of Brad Brock. He's my new mans, basically, for anyone who is not aware. So he's like my secondary dude. I know we all have our dudes. My dude's definitely still Seth Lugo. Not abandoning Seth Lugo as my dude, to be sure. But Brad Brock is low-key my secondary dude now, because he was on the Orioles during pretty much most of my years that I lived in Baltimore. He was there from, I think, 2014 to 2018. So basically almost my entire Baltimore tenure, and he was one of the more reliable pitchers in that Orioles bullpen during the years when the Orioles were good, before this latest, you know, very bad stretch that the Orioles are having. And he was their eighth inning guy, and he was like extremely, extremely solid over that period of time. And he was signed to like a 1 year, $3 million something by the Cubs, and he's not had a good year, and so he was released. But it's one of those guys where he's, like, really not too far removed from being, like, all-star caliber reliever. So.
Well, and his struggles this year have been super specific. Like, he's still striking guys out. His velocity is okay. He's just, his walks have spiked. And a lot. I mean, he's walking something like 6 per 9 innings. I mean, it's a bad number. Like, there's no doubt about that. But, like, also, it's something that you can kind of imagine might be coachable. Like, yeah. It tracks. So it'll be interesting to see if that's something that either resolves, or even just like, it might even be a case, you know, and obviously I've not been watching him day in and day out, but like, it also kind of could be a situation where you're just seeing some bad luck, some like unfortunate pitch sequencing, some bad matchups with umpires. Like, he's a reliever, so it's still very easy for there to be little flares of statistical weirdness going on. So in any case, it'll be a fun thing to watch over the next few weeks, see how he settles in.
Yeah. Well, and plus he's excited to be here. He's a Met fan. Just endears him to me like immediately.
That's pretty great.
Exactly. So yeah, he talked about, for those of you that missed that little blip, Brad Brock talked about how in 2015 he attended the World Series as a fan because he grew up in Freehold, New Jersey, which, hell yeah, Jersey for life. And he grew up a Mets fan. So that's really, really fun. So it's just fun to have a group of dudes that like really want to be here, like a strong Long Island contingent, a strong New Jersey contingent, a strong like grew up a Mets fan contingent between like Brock and Stroman and Steven Matz and Todd Frazier bringing that New Jersey energy. It's just really, really fun to have.
Wait, Panic too, team. Right? Did I?
Yeah. Yes.
Did I forget that?
He's from, yes, Wappingers. Yes. The North Stater people, well, not North, but you know, not the down like Jersey City vibe. Show some love for the people up north.
Wasn't he born in Yonkers?
Yonkers, yeah, and then he moved to Wappingers. Yeah, to Wappingers, so yeah, fun. I guess he's downstate too.
Yeah, part downstate.
It's nice. They seem to be repping from Long Island Railroad, New York Jersey Transit, and Metro North. I mean, that's a really like well balanced. Yeah.
I love all of it. Yeah, Joe Panik also, you know, has roots here. So it's just really cool to have a strong, like, local contingent. That's very fun. I really like that.
Yeah, I think they said there's a fifth of the roster that's local now.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And that's, yeah, like, you just don't think New York producing so many, you know, athletes usually, but, you
maybe
know,
not good ones. We're talking about Joe Panik. Sorry, Joe. Sorry.
I wonder who the best like baseball player that the New York metropolitan area has ever produced is. I'd have to look that up. I have no idea.
That's an interesting question.
We'll nerd out on it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, we'll look it up and get back to you, listeners, about that. I'm sure some of you are good enough baseball historians that you're already screaming the answer at us through your car stereo or through your speakers or however else you're listening. But yeah, email us. Hey, if you have the answer, email us.
Yes, please.
Or it'll be somebody sad like Stephen Matz.
Stephen Matz, well, himself, as it turns out.
I will say, all of these, like, tri-state area dudes, it does sort of fall in line with what I was saying last week about, like, even if the Mets aren't going to be, like, a winning team, and I'm totally buying into what they're selling these last couple weeks, but, like, it's the Mets. They could lose 10 in a row starting, well, Sunday. But, like, even if they're not going to win all their games, it's a fun team to watch, and... You know, no, it's probably not the best baseball business that the Mets seem more inclined to get local kids on the team, but like, it's fun. I love all the parent videos. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, oh, Mama Stroman.
Marcus Mama Stroman.
Oh my. So I always good. Get super weepy at those videos because I sometimes think about how I would be if it were my little ones.
And... I can't even imagine.
I can't.
Oh my God. I almost lost it at Little League. So, like, yeah, it would be a lot.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I was saying this in response to some folks, and I was chatting up some folks in the comments section on Amazing Avenue recently, and you know, there are obviously, like, fans come in all shapes and sizes and root in different ways, and I am totally accepting of that. I strongly dislike gatekeeping in fandom. I think that that's bullshit, and I don't think that you should ever tell other people how to fan. However, when I was talking to people who, like, still aren't really buying in, which is not how I'm seeing things lately, and, you know, they were really... not buying in, and I was like, hey, you know what, even if the Mets don't make the playoffs, it's not going to take away the joy that I felt for these past couple of weeks. Nothing can take that away. Yet would it be more fun if the Mets ended up, like, in the wild card position at the end of the year? Sure. But, like, even if they don't, it's not going to take away the happiness I felt watching all these games, watching all these improbable comebacks. Like, those are moments that you can't take back from me now. So I'm just going to enjoy the hell out of them while I can.
And, like, on the flip side, I know people will sometimes talk about, like, you know, bracing themselves. But honestly, when has not enjoying a winning streak ever made the following losing streak felt less shitty? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Like, you never, like, oh boy, this feels so much worse than it would have if they'd been losing for the last month and a half. Like, that's not a thing. And I think sometimes we want to tell ourselves that it is, in, like, a misguided attempt to have sucky things not suck, but they will, and we can't control them, so enjoy the parts that don't suck.
Right.
And imagine, like, even being in this position, like when Vargas and Mickey got into it with Tim Healy, like, that was probably the low point, I think.
That was
and
bad.
Just to think where we were then, like, trade everybody, this team is an embarrassment, I'm embarrassed to be a fan, like, I remember saying this. And then now here we're like, oh my God, they're actually in it. Like, it's like a, not like a 360, like, you had to do two spins to even get to this point, because I still kind of don't even believe it's happening, but it is. But you know what, it's been the lowest lows kind of make the highest highs even more sweet, and who cares? Like, obviously I care if they make the playoffs or not, but not too long ago that wasn't even on the radar. So just the fact that we can have this conversation is a win in my book.
Right. And on this very podcast, we were having the, like, come to Jesus, how much longer can we do this podcast? Like,
we did.
That wasn't that long ago.
I think we had
ago,
a couple
folks.
Of those, but,
oh,
like,
we,
definitely.
I think we went multiple.
The, like, how much longer can we put up with this ownership? How much longer can we put up with, you know, putting
what
ourselves
what are our alternatives?
This? Yeah. We were having that conversation.
Yes. Allison, you had that quote. That almost made me cry, where it's like, what do we do when our passion is gone? You said somebody told you, you'll be just that passion will go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like them, it just like hit me right in the feels. But I'm like, but now I can keep my passion with the Mets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling to have fun watching baseball again, regardless of how things all turn out in the end.
Yes, and the fact that these guys are likable dudes. Like, Vargas was the last one dragging us down, and he's gone.
Bye, Swampy.
And he was awful for the Phillies, which makes it even better.
Yeah, that is pretty.
I'm perfectly fine with him helping sink them, if that is such a possible thing. That would be lovely.
Although the Reds are not doing us any favors right now, which is an unfortunate. Oh, no, it's not the Reds that are playing the Phillies. The Reds are playing the Nationals. So that's true, but not for the team that I thought. The Phillies are also winning, I think. Against some team. Whatever. Whatever.
They're playing Cubs.
Ugh. That's come on, Cubs. You're supposed to be good. Get your act together. So
we'll yell at Sarah next week.
Yeah, we'll yell at Sarah. preview.
Spoiler alert.
So the last thing that the last kind of Mets related thing that I think is key moving forward is, you know, the bullpen. We talked about this a little bit last week, that the bullpen has been a lot better in part because it's been less exposed, because the starters have gone deeper into games. So the bullpen has been, you know, more well rested. They can actually deploy Lugo in the most key spots when they have to. And, you know, Luis Avilon's pitching a lot better. Justin Wilson hasn't been like amazing, but he's been good. And, you know, they've been less exposed, as I said. And so, but the big problem still remains that Edwin Diaz has not any better.
It's bad.
And I mean, the 2-run homer that he gave up in the game on Sunday was not the difference in the game. They still, you know, they were losing by 1 run when he gave it up, and they didn't score any runs in the bottom of the inning. So it's not like you can say like he lost them the game, but given the comebacks that the Mets have staged, you know, when they were only 1 run behind, you kind of felt like it was possible, and it did really change the momentum of the game and quash like kind of any hope that the Mets had of coming back when he made it even further out of reach. And it was just very frustrating. And as someone who is still desperately a big Edwin Diaz fan and so desperately wants him to succeed, it's really, really frustrating to watch.
Because the stuff is clearly there.
The stuff is there. It's like,
oh, I don't get what the issue is.
Slider command mostly. And like,
yeah. And everything just seems up.
I kind of don't hate the idea, honestly, of sending him to the minors for a few weeks. I was thinking about this. Like, the problem is, I mean, A, who would replace him? But honestly, like, I don't even know how you can put him out there all that much right now. But then also, like, I guess the big question is who's the pitching coach in AAA? I should probably know this, but I don't. But if it's somebody who's got a knack for fixing broken stuff, give him a crack. Give him a crack at Diaz. Like, he's not going to be seeing big game action right now anyway. They have the ability to send him down if they want to. And I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, you have to know your player's psychology. But if it's not going to really break him, you know, mentally to send him down, it just feels like the better choice, because they're pitching short.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mentally, this can't be good for him either.
Right.
I don't know if his confidence is there anymore. I mean, but he got the first two out. He struck out Rendon and it was a big strikeout. It was a perfect pitch.
Yeah.
He's
being pounded on like every pitch and that he looks hittable all the time. It's just completely inconsistent. And yeah, it's really all slider command. It's been like interesting and simultaneously extremely interesting and extremely frustrating. And I've been meaning to like flesh this out in some sort of piece, but I don't really have answers. So I don't really have a thesis to work with here, but it's been interesting to sort of watch DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Wheeler, with tonight being the exception. We'll not talk about tonight's Wheeler performance. But, like, they've all found their sliders in a big way in this second half, and that's been key to their success. And early on in the season, it was the slider and the off-speed stuff that was really killing them, and I suspected it was in part because of the baseball that was really hurting them, because they all are heavily reliant on the Worthen slider, the hard slider. Now,
Familia, too.
Right, Familia as well. And Familia's been better, but he's been in low leverage situations, so we'll see how, you know.
He's also, like, I wrote actually some stuff about the bullpen earlier today, and Familia's been better in his results. The what's going into it is still really problematic, and his walk rate has actually gotten worse in the last few weeks. He's literally... like, he's walking a batter an inning.
Yeah.
And that is...
his whip is
scary.
Still terrible. But...
so, like, he's the guy where I'm sitting back, I'm like, no,
not
do not trust. No, this is... it's a lie. It's a lie.
Yeah. And I mean...
but, yeah.
Edwin Diaz's slider is not the Worthen slider. It's a different style of slider. But... like, watching the other dudes all find their slider and watching Diaz continue to struggle is... puzzling to me, and I'm not sure I have the answer, because before I was kind of like, you know, the baseball, and not to say that I thought it was entirely the baseball, that's not true, because that is an excuse, and I don't think that, you know, that's a good excuse, but, you know, this makes me doubt that theory a little bit more now, because he's still continuing to struggle despite these other dudes figuring it out, and I don't know why. Despite all of them being immensely talented and having great stuff, I don't know why they are figuring it out and making the adjustment and he's not. They're all being coached by the same coaching staff.
They're also throwing a lot more innings. I mean, there's certainly, like, I don't know what the number of sliders thrown by each exactly is this season, but statistically, it's almost certainly that each of those starters are throwing many more sliders in a repetition than Diaz is. So it may be that he is also working towards figuring it out, but that he is a little slower to do so, in part because he hasn't had the reps. And then also it might just be a personality or physical, you know, variant that just makes him a little bit more behind the others. That there's a lot of kind of circles of possibility around here that intersect in different ways.
Well, and the other is, like, we've seen this with Jake. Like, on the day his slider isn't working, he'll be like, all right, I'll throw my change today. I don't think Diaz can do that. He has to rely on the slider. So if it's not working, it's, you know, not what working. Can he do? Yeah, it's not working.
Right, he doesn't have a starting pitcher's repertoire to work with. He has a reliever's repertoire to work with. So, yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest bummer to me during this whole thing, is watching Edwin Diaz continue to struggle. And, you know, I'm with Maggie,
so
honestly. Send him down. Like, I hate to say it. It kills me. But if it helps, if it can help, anything they can do to help should be considered.
They need him. Like, he's not a nice thing to have. If they're going to compete, he is an absolute necessity. They need a stronger bullpen. Like, the winning streak, the bullpen has not smashed it, but, like, they certainly could smash it in the future. Like, that's totally a possibility. They already basically sunk the team for the first half of the season. It's a freaking miracle they got out of it. So, yeah, like, that bullpen needs a better anchor than they have right now. Which is nothing against Lugo. We love you, Lugo. Mwah.
My dude. Obsessed with Lugo.
And your also, actual official dude, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And how many innings how many batters did Lugo face that he didn't allow a run, I think it was?
Oh, it was 26, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, or it was either 26 or 27. I can't remember if he actually broke the
I think he tied the record.
Okay.
So, you're not going to get a historic run out of Lugo every time out. Like, to just assume that is kind of, you know, unrealistic. So you need to have another option.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need they need Edwin Diaz to, and they don't even necessarily need 2018 Edwin Diaz. They just need something approaching the Edwin Diaz of old.
Yeah.
In order to, for that matter,
I mean, they could, like, look, I think it's less likely than Diaz figuring it out, but if Familia were to figure it out, that would also be fine.
That would be great.
If one of them was actually, like, pitching shutdown innings, then we would be in much better shape.
Agree. We need one of those two to be good in order to sustain this run. And my, I don't know, my last ditch theory regarding Edwin Diaz is just like, and I kind of, I poo-pooed this a great deal at the beginning when they first acquired him, when everyone, like, you know, like, lost their shit about this. But I can't help but wonder if the bone spurs are affecting him. I don't know. I, like, pitchers have bone spurs literally all the time. And it doesn't affect their pitching. It happens routinely. It's not that big of a deal. But sometimes they need surgery to remove them. The Mets have had pitchers who have necessitated that. But it just makes me wonder if that is having an effect.
Yeah. And if it is, like, would it be better to just shut him down?
Get him under the knife. I mean, that's the other...
If they have serious reason to believe that he is being affected physically, then they can't keep pitching him. They can't use him. There's somebody in the minors who could give them a 6 ERA. That's not, you know.
Sure.
They could figure out a 6 ERA dude. And, like, get him ready for next year. Like, that's, if that's the issue. Like, there's certainly a lot of other things on the table right now, but, like, they got to do something, because right now he's just wasting a roster spot.
And didn't he pitch, like, an insane amount of innings last year?
Yeah.
Probably.
So, you wonder if, like, I don't know, maybe there's a fatigue factor in there. I don't know.
Sure,
but
could be.
Yeah, because, I mean, after 2015, you know, when all of our pitchers pitched a ton of innings, none of them came back. I think 2016 was DeGrom's worst year so far. So,
oh, still, like, pretty amazing.
I mean, for him.
Yeah. DeGrom. Grading on a curve here.
Yeah, we're
going, like, that miserable 3.5 ERA.
Ugh, so gross. Jake, what is wrong with you? But yeah, so you wonder if there is some carryover from year to year. Like, maybe you don't prepare the same because you knew you threw more in the season before, or I don't know. Because pitchers are very, like, they're insane about their preparation, their routines. And so
you need to be a special type of OCD to be a pitcher.
Yeah. So I'm not, it could be that, you know, all the innings last year affected him somehow.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. At this point, we're just searching for answers.
Answers. Because I don't
please
think anybody
fix
has.
Fix yourself, Diaz. Please. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, we would love you to fix yourself.
Bring back Narco, at least. Alexa, try that.
Play Narco. That'll fix it. Alexa, yes. Play Narco.
Alexa. Fix this.
Fix it, Alexa. On that note, when we get back, we will talk about a recent, rather controversial thing that happened that involved several baseball players' wives, and have a general discussion about, you know, spouses of players and what that experience is like. So stay tuned. And we are back. So for those of you that missed it and are not terminally online like the rest of us,
what do you even do, like, 18 hours a day?
Yeah, right. Like,
how do you spend your time?
Yeah, like, how are you not, like,
to, like, talk to people who are near you? I don't understand that.
Weird.
Talk to people from not your podcast microphone? I don't know what that's like. So recently, Bria Anderson, who is the wife of White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson, had a rather charged Instagram discussion in I guess there's, like, a group DM for all the wives, with Elizabeth Swarzak, the wife of former Met Anthony Swarzak, now Brave Anthony Swarzak. And that exchange was posted by Lucas Giolito's wife, Arianna. And it was a doozy. of a discussion. Yeah,
and just for context, Tim Anderson and his wife are both Black, and that's an increasingly small proportion of the MLB community. But like, I think that's an important piece of context for placing this interaction. And of course, and like both of the other involved parties are not Black. So that's just to set the stage.
To set the stage. And to be absolutely clear, Arianna Giolito is posting this from a place of, you know, solidarity with Tim Anderson's wife. So she posted this because she was pretty disgusted with the things that Elizabeth Swarzak said, which essentially amount to, you know, they had this discussion, which was spurred on by the recent horrific shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. You know, just another day in America, folks. So, you know, they had a discussion about gun violence, which are important discussions to have, you know, but unfortunately it didn't go so well. And basically, you know, Elizabeth Swarzak brought up the whole, you know, what about Black on Black violence in Chicago every single day, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I will quote Bria Anderson here because her words, she said it better than I ever could have. Those Black people weren't killing children in schools or driving 9 hours specifically to kill brown people. What the actual fuck?
Which is about as polite a response as the super racist and distracting response of what about Black on Black violence deserves. I mean, I would say like it deserves just a giant fuck you and nothing else. But yeah, like that's about as much. That is much of a response as it deserves.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Swarzak went on to say, basically she kept digging her hole even deeper, unsurprisingly. So she went on to say, the word white nationalist has been used recently to convince you that it's white supremacy when it's actually okay to be a nationalist, which is a person that's proud and loves their country. And basically Bria Anderson was like, I'm sorry, excuse me, what? Like, I think you're not even talking about the things that I'm trying to talk about here. Like, you're trying to misdirect mass shootings that are happening that are predominantly done by white people to bring it up, to bring it back to Black people here. And that's, like, not okay. And you're...
Yeah, basically, she said something super racist, was called out on it, and then immediately responded with, actually, white nationalism is good.
Yeah, actually, and it's all fine.
That's not the way to go.
That's not ever a statement you want to see someone volunteering. Like, no. Apropos of nothing, white nationalism, thumbs up. Like, that is that's a bad conversation right off the bat.
Yeah, and Bria kept trying to, like, you know, she was way calmer than I would have been in that situation.
Yeah. Props
to her. Amazing job. But she basically just kept being like, Elizabeth, you understand, like, how gross this is, right? Like, I'm trying to tell you this. And then at the end, like, Elizabeth basically, like, the exchange finishes with, like, her basically accusing Bria of being, like, racist against white people. Which, first of all, is not a thing, by the way.
Nope.
Nope.
So,
well, and it's also so disrespectful to Bria because this is her job,
right?
Like,
exactly.
She works with, you know, the people of Chicago. Like, you don't have to lecture her on it. That's her day. That's her life. That's what she's trying to work to help. So don't, like, tell her, you know, what about all that? Like, no, believe me, she's intimately aware of it.
Yeah, she knows about this stuff. And to sort of, you know, I'm going to read the caption that Arianna Giolito wrote because she basically brought up this point. So when she posted the exchange, she wrote, I am so disgusted and disappointed. Bria Anderson is a teacher with a master's degree working on her doctorate while raising two girls and running a nonprofit organization that works to win the youth of South Side Chicago. For someone within this baseball family to say such disgraceful and disgusting things, to shamelessly act in a demeaning and hateful way is reprehensible. Half the players in Major League Baseball are immigrants from Latin countries. To know someone among you holds hate in their hearts and thinks of you as a criminal because of your birthplace is something I cannot even imagine. Insulting and demeaning a woman's incredible nonprofit work is mind-boggling. I'm angry and hurt for every person of color involved in this sport. The players, wives, front office staff, coaches, trainers, and the fans who love this sport. And for the families of those who lost their lives at the hands of mass murderers who, in their own words, wanted to kill people of color. So, props. Props for that caption, because that was awesome.
It was perfect, yeah.
And we're going to share... If you're reading this and if you're listening to this and you haven't read the interactions, like, we're going to share them because I think it's really important to see, to just see it with your own eyes and digest it and kind of understand what's going back and forth there.
Yeah.
And I think Lucas Giolito backed her up too.
Yes.
He said, I'm proud of what she said.
Yep. And that was really, really cool to see. He was basically like, yep, I agree with my wife. She's super outspoken about these things. She's awesome. Like,
yep.
And I was like, hell yeah. And I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot to digest there. There's stuff that I like, the exchange is long and it's, I don't think it's useful to read the entire thing on the podcast. We're going to post it. There was a lot touched on there in the caption that was covered in the conversation that I didn't read out loud regarding immigration and other issues. And so, like, there is, first of all, a lot to digest there. But second of all, it's part of a bigger discussion about how we see how these issues affect players, but we rarely see the side of it of how it affects their families. And how, you know, how the spouses are involved, how their kids are involved in all of these things, you know, often goes unnoticed by people, and it shouldn't.
And, well, and also you kind of get thrust into it because your husband is famous too. So, but that's also something you have to be aware of, that your words also have a lot of power behind them, and you can use them for both good or you can use them for bad. And I'm glad that, you know, it seems like most of them are using it for good, but there is a lot of pressure just because of the person you married, too.
Well, and I mean, we talked on this show already about how out of their depth some players get on social media.
Yeah.
And I think it has to be even worse for the spouses, who get less training, less guidance. They have less spotlight, so, you know, early flubs that they make, not to call something, you know, a serious interaction like this a flub, but you know what I mean? Like, they're less guarded. And yeah, it's really, it's kind of a powder keg.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's like Ariana pointed out in the caption, it is so incredibly hard for me to even imagine how hurtful it must be to be in Bria's position and to already feel, you know, so isolated, because the spouses don't live an easy life, you guys. Like, I know that, you know, players make a lot of money and that's nice. Not every player does, but a lot of these players make a decent chunk of change. But, you know, they have to often raise kids essentially on their own. Their spouses are gone for good parts of the year, and they travel a lot, and they live this, like, pretty isolating life where they can't really, you know, talk publicly all the time about their struggles. And so the small community that they do have is other people going through the same thing as them. So other wives. And to have within that old community someone sharing such hateful and racist things, I can't even imagine what it must be like in her position. Like, I can't even turn here for support.
Yeah, it's a pretty, it's got to be really demoralizing. And it already has to be demoralizing. You know, you are literally a minority in terms of your background, but also a political minority in the clubhouse. Like, that's by a pretty wide margin. Isolating is the right word. It's a blow.
Yeah. Let's not make any bones about it. Elizabeth Swarzak's views are not unique among baseball players, among baseball players' wives.
And because of her tweet some old tweets by Anthony Swarzak resurfaced, and let's say they're two peas in a pod.
Yeah, let me just say, it's not surprising that they're married, and let me also just say, I am quite pleased that Anthony Swarzak's no longer a Met, despite the fact that he's pitching well for another team, and that's frustrating. But I don't even care about that, because seeing his old tweets resurface and what those tweets contained were pretty ugly. I'm not gonna bother reading them on this podcast. Please. You can go look them up if you want to. They're not
good. Easy enough to find if that's how you're feeling.
Yeah. Yep. You can find it on the old twitter.com because nobody deletes their goddamn tweets.
Oh, and now they've all been screenshotted, so they're still there. You can't get rid of it. You can't hide.
Now.
Nope.
Your ugly views are out here for everyone to see. Congratulations.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean,
This is kind of off topic, but Tim Anderson just tweeted something today. I think it's a special on ESPN that they're going to do. And the quote from him is, "When you mention baseball to other black people, I want them to think of me. It motivates the culture to try and learn more about baseball and motivates kids to get into baseball." He's a really good role model, and his wife is a really good role model for, you know, like we said, they're becoming a severe minority in baseball. And it's sad if you think of, like, you know, all the great black baseball players in history, like, and now they're all going to play football, or they don't see baseball as an option anymore. And that was, you know, the big deal with Kyler Murray, too, is he decided to go play football instead of playing baseball. But you have these great role models, and you have somebody out there just trying to tear them down and not even appreciate what they're doing for the sport and for humanity.
Yeah. I mean, Tim and Bria are a power couple and about as good, as good of ambassadors as you can have for the game. And, you know, it's, even though it's so, so deeply unfortunate that these comments had to surface because they were made, at least I now know how cool Bria Anderson is, because I didn't know that before.
She's a badass.
I didn't know how cool she was. Now life goals. So that's one positive thing to come out of all of this. And, like, you know, the life of being a spouse of a baseball player is really difficult, and they often only have each other, and they do a lot of good work behind the scenes, and it's not recognized as much as, you know, the work that the players do for charity, for instance. The wives do a ton of work for charity, and it's not recognized, it's not, you know, given the screen time that the players get, and they're the ones, you know, raising the kids often. They're the ones raising the puppies in the case of Jeff McKee.
Yeah, that's why you call your wife when you want to adopt a puppy if you're a baseball player.
Yeah.
Is because you know who's going to be walking that puppy, and it's not Jeff McNeil.
Exactly.
But even that, like, you know, looking back on it, like, I hope she didn't feel pressured into adopting the puppy that, like, now everybody and their brother is talking about, well, now you have to get this puppy. Like, look at this puppy. Like, it was broadcast everywhere, that puppy. So how could she say no at that point?
I realize we can never know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
And moreover, even if we did know the answer, we would not be able to correct a wrong. So I am going to channel my therapist and just assume that the thing that I cannot control is just fine.
Yeah.
I'm just going to assume the best because I can't do anything about it.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. And we all get to benefit from this adorable puppy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Willow McNeil, which I know Willow McNeil was not named after the Buffy character, but
yes.
I'm going to pretend because it's better that
too.
Way.
Amazing. And to kind of go with the theme of circling back to the Mets for a second, I just want to, because the tweet kind of came around the same time as all of this, and when we were talking about doing this segment about the struggles of being a baseball spouse and, you know, all of that, I just want to give a shout out to Amanda Lugo, especially because Seth Lugo's my dude, and Amanda Lugo made she's fantastic on Twitter, by the way.
She is.
Absolutely should follow her. And she made a fantastic, really supportive tweet recently. You know, it was right after, you know, Seth Lugo tied that record. Somebody tweeted about him tying the record, 26 up, 26 down. Hats off to Seth Lugo for franchise record tying streak of batters retired in a row. And Amanda Lugo retweeted it and said, "And to think, I remember folks asking him when he would, quote, get a real job. Never give up on your dreams, kids." So it's just really cool to see, you know, the supportive spouse out there, because it's not easy. It's such a long journey to the big leagues, especially for somebody like Seth Lugo, who wasn't like a hotshot prospect who came up to the major leagues when he was 20 years old. You know, like
he was 26, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is. He's in his mid-20s and he's been doing the grind for a long time, and he's had a lot of injuries in his career and dealt with a lot of, you know, setbacks and obstacles. And so to see a spouse be so supportive, knowing how much they have to sacrifice for their spouse's dream, is just really, you know, it's nice. It's like, oh, cool. True love does exist.
True love.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. It makes me happy to see these things. And I think that, you know, we should just, when we talk about players and we, and I am formulating a piece on this that may or may not be published somewhere, more on that to come. But when we dehumanize players and when we use dehumanizing language to describe them, remember that behind every baseball player, there is a human being. He is a human being and he has a family often. And these are people that are affected by his career too. And they are human beings worthy of respect and worthy of, you know, decency. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, I can't even imagine like being like someone's wife and seeing, oh, he sucks, I hope he gets traded, this is the worst thing ever. Like, that's gotta be also really awful to hear on a day-to-day basis too.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially because if he does suck, he knows it.
Yeah,
his family knows it. Like, it's,
and also they, it's probably
definitely
see
insult to injury.
Yeah, they probably see him coming home frustrated and upset, and you know all the work they've put in to get here, like, so that's gotta be really hard on the other side to, you know, what can you say? Like, you do, I guess you just gotta be supportive, but, you know, knowing everything that went into them getting here, and fans are just so flippant about it, it's gotta be really hard to hear.
Yeah. So what I say is, more wholesome families, like Bria and Tim Anderson and Amanda and Seth Lugo and Mama Stroman and Grandpa Matz and Isan Diaz's family. More of that. Less racism.
And the Giolitos.
Yeah, the Giolitos.
Less racism, though. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
I mean, in general, like, yes. As long as we're discouraging racism, I'll say, like, let's discourage all the racism.
All the racism. No,
just do it.
Yes. None of it, please.
None. Thanks. Everywhere.
None of it. So I feel like that's a good note to end on. Stop being racists.
Yeah.
So when we get back, we will close things out like we always do with walk-off wins. So stay tuned for that. Welcome back. So we are going to finish out the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. So Linda, we'll start with you this week, because we know that you were at Friday night's game. You wrote an entire piece about it, which you should go to amazingavenue.com and read the piece, because
it's a great
so
piece.
Good.
It's really good.
One of the best things I've read in ages, gave me goosebumps.
No.
So good.
Yep.
Linda. Go read
no.
it.
Yes.
Linda will now attempt to describe verbally her experience.
Well, it's actually a walk-off win.
Literally.
Literally. Okay, first, I was annoyed at my brother for getting the tickets, because I was like, I hate going to Nationals games. They always lose when we go.
Word.
Yeah. Like, they're the most, like, I saw Max Scherzer against Logan Barrett. You can, you know how that game went. Like,
I went to the game at Nats Park where Noah Syndergaard hurt himself.
Ooh. So. Like, the most brutal losses you could, but so then.
Yeah, I saw Scherzer no hit the Mets. So.
Cool. Good so history.
We've all been there. So, like, I hate going to Nationals games. I just hate them. Like, the Mets, and the Mets just don't lose. They lose in embarrassing fashion against them. Like, it's the worst, like twist of the knife you could possibly do. But then I was like, okay, maybe it'll be fun. But then I was nervous about it because, like, this is a big game. Shockingly, it was a big game. And then that, I even put that in my piece. That was my first hint that the Mets are back, because I was worrying about them. Like, that was a new feeling this season. And I don't know if it came across, what came across on TV, but Stroman was just unbelievable. The crowd reacted to him, the way he came out. He got a standing ovation coming in from the bullpen. And then he was kind of waving to them, to the crowd. And then when he would just, like, roar coming off the mound after big strikeouts, like, the crowd was going nuts. Like, it was kind of like, you know, mutual beneficial relationship. Like, he was feeding off of us, we were feeding off of him. And, you know, I kind of actually found the Mets batting boring. Well, number one, because they weren't doing anything, and number two, it's like, get Stroman back out here, I want to see Stroman. And he was pitching the game of his life. Like, he's never had that many strikeouts in a game, and it was just incredible to see. So, like, that, I don't know if that came across, but that's how it felt in the stands, and how electric it was, and how, like, it really did feel like a playoff game. And it hadn't been, like, this is the most fun I've had at a game in a really long time. And then, you know, I think I even said this in our Slack channel, that, you know, when a person is at the game, you're ahead of the broadcast. I'm like, you're lucky I didn't say anything. I was messaging you from the game. It was so tense. Like, my back was hurting all day Saturday because I was just tense the entire time. And, like, and then when Rendon hit the home run, it's like, ugh, here we go. And I was just kind of, I wasn't sad, but I was just like, oh, they were so close. And now all the stupid narratives are going to come of, like, they can't be good teams. And then people started to leave after the eighth, but most people stayed at the ninth. Like, the stadium was still packed for the ninth inning. And then as soon as J.D. Davis got on, like, there was that little ripple in the crowd, like, oh, you know, what if? And they're like, oh, I'll watch them just score one run. And then Ramos got on. And I was like, oh, wait, now we have the tying runs on. This is great. And then they flashed Todd Frazier's stats against Sean Doolittle on the board. And I was like, oh, my God. He's like 2 for 4 with a home run. I'm like, oh my God, he could do it. And as soon as they did that, there goes the ball. And I seriously did Grandpa Matt's. I was jumping up going, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. And, like, everybody's waving their t-shirts. And I've never seen a stadium like that. I didn't go to any playoff games, but I had just never seen that collective roar before, like, not in a really long time anyway, because it was, when I went in 2015, it was just nonstop, we got this, go home Nationals, because I went to the game that they swept against the Nationals in 2015, and there was kind of like a confidence there, and this was just, it was tense, it was back and forth, and it was just, you know, this, you know, you were at the lowest low when Rendon hit the home run, and now you know, Frazier hits the home run, and now it's like the highest high. But then they had the pass ball in the eighth inning. I was like, see, that's the difference. See, now, nope, that's not a walk-off. See, now they're just tying it up. So I was like, of course, I have to find, like, you know, the one wrong thing that happened. But, you know, Panic also got a nice hand, too, when he was first introduced, because, you know, again, he's a local kid, and we were all kind of welcoming him. And then he got the hit, and then Lagares couldn't get the bunt down. And then McNeil hit a pop-up, and even seeing it on TV, like, that did not go anywhere. But half the crowd stood up and was like, ah! And it's like, no, that's not going anywhere. Like, you're just willing them to win it, because it's like, we came this far, we can't lose now. And then, because I was behind home, so, but up. So I could kind of see, you know, everything. So then I saw Conforto hit it, and you could tell it was, you know, well hit. But then Ian was running, and then all of a sudden he just stopped. And
I feel like he gave up on that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't believe it because it looked like he was tracking. I'm like, oh no, here we go. And then because the crowd really, I don't know, like it just seemed they just knew, they just assumed that it was going to be a walk-off hit because it was so well hit. And then all of a sudden you just see the little white orb fall on the warning track. And it's like, it fell. And then, oh, the like, we were banging on the railing in front of us because I couldn't go too nuts because I was really afraid I would fall over and kill myself.
We're really glad you didn't.
Because we were in the first row. So we were like banging on the railings, like high-fiving everybody around us. And it was just, and, you know, the next day, Gary even said, he was like, I could not tell if anybody was speaking because it was just that loud in there. Like, when whatever song they played after Todd Frazier hit his home run, I have no clue. Like, I couldn't hear anything Michael Conforto said in the post-game interview. I know, I think he said something about the fans. I'm not sure. But, like, and then leaving, everybody was partying in the stairwells, and it just... Like, it couldn't be like this all the time. Why isn't it like this all the time? Like, it was August 9th. This isn't a playoff game. Like, what other fans go this nuts over, like, a game in August? And even Strasburg said it. And, you know? Yep,
they were mad jealous.
Yep, it's like,
yeah. That was harsh, man.
Yeah,
I
how do you like us now?
Strasburg isn't the first one to say it. I'm not
feeling great.
No, Bryce Harper said
Bryce
it.
Bryce Harper said it. And that, I mean, like, I have a lot of experience with games at Nats Park. Let me just tell you, they are absolutely right. They are absolutely right. And yeah, maybe I'm a little biased too, I will admit it. But I've been to a lot of Mets-Nats games, and their fans just aren't as passionate as Mets fans. They just aren't.
Well, they feel bad because, like, so a lot of the individual Nats fans I've met through being a fan of baseball in general have actually been, like, some great, smart people who do love the game. And you know, you'd have to love the game to be a Nats fan from the beginning because they were just so bad for so long. But, like, you know, it's just not a big fan base. It's not a fan base that gets to a lot of games. It's... You know, they don't make it easy to get to and from the park, so it's hard like, fill it up.
No.
But yeah, so I do kind of, I feel a little bit bad just for some individual Nats fans who are wonderful people. But yeah, they're not wrong.
Nope.
That's just it. Like, it's not, they're not wrong.
It's the replies to that tweet of Strasburg saying, oh, you know, I wish, basically wishing Nationals fans would do that. All of them were like, yeah, I've gotten yelled at when I cheered for an RBI double. Like, Nationals fans were admitting they've gotten yelled at in their own stadium.
The stadium, the people that work there are, like, very, very strict about stuff. Like, one time I got there really early for a Mets-Nats game, and I, like, wanted to watch batting practice from a certain, like, vantage point, and they, like, kicked me out because I didn't have tickets in that section. I'm like, it's, like, 2.5 hours before game time. Like, what are you doing?
Yikes.
It's just, yeah, it's not, like, the stadium is nice. Don't get me wrong. Aesthetically, like, the stadium is nice. They have really good food options. A lot of the same as Citi Field food options. There's Shake Shack, but without the line. It's quite nice. So there's, like, things about the fan experience there that are good, but let me just tell you, as a whole, it's not a great fan experience. It's just not.
No.
So, this week, because I don't know if it was Keith the next day, and he was like, oh, yeah, that's the, like, the Northeast, like, fandom, like, New York, Boston. Like, are we an anomaly, like, losing our minds over a big win like that?
I feel like Cubs fandom is kind of like that.
Yeah, I was like, I thought that was normal.
I don't know. Are we normal? I don't think
I don't think we are.
I don't think
I don't know what, like, true. The specifics of our non-normalness are. Like, but that's the reason that I don't know that is because I'm not normal.
Yeah,
that's
like, true. You can't be a Mets fan and be psychologically normal. Let's just be real about that.
True.
Linda, you did mention, you asked, like, I'm not sure what parts of that came through in the broadcast.
Yeah,
and I will say that, so I listened to the first inning on the radio because I was driving during it, And the radio broadcast especially, I felt, was electric. I could feel, like, I could hear the crowd noise. I feel like you hear the crowd noise a lot more on the radio broadcast than on the TV broadcast. And so when Stroman, like, I heard the whole first inning, so when Stroman, like, came out and how loud the crowd was, I remember thinking to myself, sitting in the car, that is as loud as I have ever heard this stadium. Ever. Ever.
Yeah. Howie Rose said he never even heard Shea Stadium like that.
Which is wild, because Shea Stadium has much bigger capacity than Citi Field has.
Yeah, and, like, Shea Stadium actually shook when they won, so I was like...
And to be fair, it's probably not actually objectively a good
situation. A good thing.
Right.
But, like, it was just insane to just how everybody, as soon as Trey Turner was announced, everybody just started chanting, "Let's go, Mets." Like, it was just assumed. Now's the time. We're going to show you. You're in our house now, buddy. Let's break it. Yeah. And I feel like that's what got to Pete Alonso, because you could clearly see him nodding along to the chants, and he was getting pumped up by them. And it's like, oh, and then, of course, then he got too over anxious and dove for the ball. And so then everybody's like, no, Pete, no. Why?
It's okay. It worked out in the end. But I got the benefit of and we'll get back to this in a minute, but I got the benefit of the rest of that game watching the Masson broadcast.
Because I just got voted worst. Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah, they're the worst.
I did. And so the calls, if you can find them, listeners, I highly recommend, if you're looking for a laugh, I highly recommend watching the Masson calls from these walk-offs.
Anything but that.
Anything but that. Oh, it was just so good. It was just so good. I can't even. Anyway, that's an aside. Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, keeping in the theme, my walk-off win is just the general existence of Michael Conforto, who I had pegged him to have a big season, and he's not had like the massive MVP year that I still truly believe is waiting in there somewhere, but he has just been so solid and underappreciated, and he's such a like solid professional dude who comes in there day in day out, does his job, plays center field for ridiculous reasons that are not his fault. And he's just a really fun guy to root for. And I was so glad that he got his first career walk-off on Friday. And he looks great. And I think he's really just a special guy. And I'm really glad we get to watch him every day.
Yep. Love Scoot.
And if you don't think I have shirtless Michael Conforto pictures on my phone,
you'd be mistaken.
Yes, you would be wildly mistaken.
Oh man, shirtless Scoot, such a good, so good, so good,
so good.
So, as I alluded to earlier, I had the Masson broadcast on Friday night because I was in Baltimore, and that is my walk-off win for this week. I was in Baltimore because I had a wedding for a close friend of mine, and it's the first time I had been back in Baltimore since I moved, so there's a whole host of reasons why that made me happy this past weekend. First of all, I got to see my dog. So for those of you who don't know, during most of my time in grad school, my roommate and I had a dog. Her name is Cricket. She is fantastic. I've posted pictures of her on Twitter before, but I love her.
We should put up more pictures just in case.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. More pictures of Cricket. Just those will be incoming. From this weekend, I'll post pictures of Cricket on Twitter. So, you know, my roommate and I knew we wanted to get a dog, like early on in grad school. But we also knew that we weren't going to be roommates forever. You know, once our PhD program ended, we were going to go our separate ways, have our separate careers. And so we made the absolutely heart-wrenching decision ahead of time to decide whose dog it actually was, even though while we were roommates, it would be our dog. And my roommate grew up with a dog. She had like a dog throughout her whole childhood, and I did not. Cricket was my first pet. And so we figured because she had the experience as a dog owner and I did not, it would be her dog. And so we established that really early on. Folks, if you have a similar arrangement where you have a roommate and you're getting a pet together, have these conversations ahead of time. Otherwise, you're going to be like a divorced couple and it's not going to be good. So I knew that this day would come when I would move and it would be absolutely heart-wrenching, and it has been awful and I miss my dog a lot. But I got to see her this weekend. So that's been one of the like really awesome things about this past weekend in Baltimore, is I got to hang out with my dog, give her tons of love and tons of pets. Happy she remembered me. She was so excited. Aww. When I walked through the door, my roommate captured the video of it. And it's just, it makes me so happy every time I look at it. So not only that, but obviously I got to celebrate a beautiful wedding of a close friend of mine to her husband. So congratulations to my friend Kayla and her husband Chris. It was a beautiful ceremony and a fantastic reception. All my college friends got to hang out together and have a fantastic time celebrating the two of them. And I'm just so grateful for all of these people in my life and getting to hang out with them for the first time in a while. So that was really, really fun. So it was a really great weekend in Baltimore. Great first weekend back since I moved. I hope to visit again sometime. So that's my walk-off win for this week. Not baseball related, but still very, very happy.
Yay, still good.
Yeah, very good, very happy. So while you're waiting for the next episode of A Pod of Their Own to hit their feet, to hit your feeds, you can go to amazonavenue.com and read all of our fantastic content. You can check out Linda's piece about her experience at Friday night's game. I highly recommend you check that out. I highly recommend you check out all of our game recaps, all of our analysis, all of our latest Mets content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And how about you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Follow all of us on Twitter. Follow the show. Email us aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. We will eventually do another mailbag segment at some point. In the meantime, you can subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It really, really, really helps people find the show. Original music for the intro and outro to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go next.